Welcome to the Canadian Orange Podcast. Our intention is for this to be a place where well-informed, thoughtful people can have serious conversations about serious topics. The Orange mission is to unite Canadians around the core problem that we face as a country, which is broken money. And this podcast is a place for Canadians to have conversations about how fixing the money fixes Canada. My name is Nick. I'm speaking to Lucas in this episode. And if this conversation resonates with you or offered you value, please consider sharing it with others who are ready to hear it or donating at CanadianOrangeParty.com to support the show. Current block height is 927,301. Hash rate is at 1,073 exahashes per second. And one Canadian dollar currently buys you 785 sats. And for those who don't know, a sat, the word sat is short for Satoshi, which is a small fraction of a Bitcoin. And there are 100 million sats in a Bitcoin. And today we're talking about freedom. Before we dive in, I just want to give everyone a quick update about our first major Orange Party campaign to expose the fraud of currency inflation. You can find the project at endinflationcanada.com. So if it's safe to do so, pause this now, go there, and help us A-B test our first printed pamphlet. You can also give us some feedback on our first version of our e-pamphlet, which will be the web version of the pamphlet. Today's recording date is December 10th, so we're still kind of working out a few bugs with the feedback form, but it mostly works in my recent testing this morning, and it should be dialed in by December 12th, which is when we're going to ramp up efforts to really collect a lot of feedback. And so we're going to collect feedback until January 3rd, which is when votes will be tallied, and we're going to decide on our first pamphlet, and then we're going to print thousands of them. We're going to hand them out to a bunch of people, and we're going to launch social media campaigns by pumping inflation memes into Instagram and X. And the attempt there is to point everyone to the e-pamphlet, help them opt into Sound Money, and perhaps even copy and paste a letter to their politician to say, hey, you need to pay attention to money, and we need to end the fraud of currency inflation. So we appreciate you taking the time to review that. Send us brutally honest feedback. Onwards. Let's dive in.
Right.
So freedom is a big topic. There's a lot to chew on. So we're going to kind of pick a subset of questions to unpack and just share our perspectives today, introduce the topic. But I just want to start by saying that I think every generation has a purpose. And it's feeling more and more like our purpose, our generational purpose, is to expose the fraud and lies and help reverse the brainwashing that has happened over the past several decades. You know, our national anthem in Canada was written in 1880, and 100 years later, it became officially the national anthem of Canada in 1980. But True North, Strong and Free is in that national anthem. It's in our roots. But right now, Canada is not strong and free. We are weak, and I would say enslaved, because of fiat currency. And so, you know, our sense is that by restoring truth in the money, we can restore strength and freedom in Canada. So let's dig into the topic of freedom. I think that word is said a lot, but when it's one of those words where it gets thrown around a lot, it means different things to different people when I ask them. And it's really hard to pin down and define clearly. And so Lucas, you and I will probably revisit this topic, but the goal today is just introduce it, unpack it, share our perspectives. And the three main points that we'll kind of jump off is, what is freedom? We'll compare slave money to freedom money. And we can end by talking about how free speech is the bedrock of democracy. So Lucas, what does freedom mean to you?
Yeah, you asked me this earlier in the week and I've been mulling it over for a few days. I try to kind of boil it down in my own mind. I guess just this idea that I'm a human being and I get to do things because I have one life to live that's precious, and defending that is important because I can kind of extend my life by analogy to every other person that is around me and realize that their time is just as precious. And yeah, it's like you say, it's super nuanced, especially when it comes to money and you get into kind of that aspect of it. Yeah. It's I think that our notion of what is free, I've been kind of challenging myself recently to think about where I'm just willfully unfree. And it's kind of a dark path to go down when you realize that you've been kind of willingly curtailing your own freedom for social expediency or for a lot of different reasons. And it's really interesting because we have these priors about what a free person is. And I think that to wrap up kind of my rambling here, like there's not a lot of people out there that would say that freedom is bad. And these are the same people that thought you a moral monster for thinking that you should be able to say whatever you want, and or think you a moral monster for thinking that you should be able to, like, for you to think that you can spend freedom money or save in money that makes you free. All sorts of things with the whole COVID thing. And our priors to do with freedom are just, they tend to be pretty unhealthy in the healthiest of us. And I think it's pretty interesting going down this rabbit hole.
It's definitely an interesting rabbit hole. I think for me, a few things came top of mind, and then a few sort of principles came to mind. So the main things that came top of mind were, the big one, which is maybe a little bit too abstract to really mean much, is freedom to me means submission to truth. We could probably do a whole podcast unpacking that, so we'll kind of, not the time and place.
Just say well said and move on.
Tangibly, I think freedom to me is like the freedom to speak without fear and to transact without censorship is a big element of it. Freedom from theft, coercion, and intimidation was another big one that came to mind. And then freedom to live as I desire without interference. So there's like, there's the negative space of freedom, where like freedom from things that are not desirable. And then there's the positive space of freedom of like the freedom to do the things that I want. But I think the deep truths around freedom that came to mind first and foremost was freedom is not given. It must be claimed through responsibility. That's like a big heuristic I always keep in mind. It's like, you know, people don't give you freedom. You must assert yourself to claim the freedoms that you have. And you actually have to know what freedoms you have to even claim them. And the only way to claim them is by taking responsibility.
And I think an important corollary to that is the notion that freedom is taken.
Yeah.
So you can have your own freedom and you can defend your own freedom, but people will take your freedom
if you don't defend it, you can assume it will be taken.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whether you realize it or not. And just examples of that statement where freedom is not given, it has to be claimed through responsibility, is like financial freedom is claimed by taking responsibility for understanding money and then choosing to opt into freedom money. Or health freedom is claimed by taking responsibility for understanding how to take care of yourself and then acting like a healthy person. And I think anytime we forfeit our freedoms for convenience, the consequence on the flip side of that is that we are less free, right? We are more dependent on someone or something. For example, with health, if you don't take responsibility for understanding how to care for your body, you forfeit that responsibility to a quote unquote professional, like a doctor. Even a well-intentioned doctor who's misinformed will cause you big problems by telling you what they think is good. And this kind of feels like where we're at, right? Like, I don't want to take responsibility for holding my money in my house in a vault, so I give it to the bank. But then if the government doesn't like you and they tell the bank to not give you your money, you are trapped. And so the price you pay for not taking full responsibility is that people can control and manipulate you or prevent you from doing what you want to do, because that's the price you paid by forfeiting responsibility, by being disempowered. I think the big thing I wanted to say is that I don't believe freedom means doing whatever I want to do. This is this common notion where people say, oh, freedom means I can do whatever I want. Because at the same time, I see a lot of those people who say the freedom to do whatever they want is great. And then what I see is that they end up being slaves to unhealthy substances or unhealthy habits, right? So they think they're free to do whatever they want, but then they become slaves to these like really primal urges that lead to a very unfulfilling life. And so what I want to get at there is the illusion of freedom is a very sneaky one, right? By massaging the definition of freedom, we can think we're free while also being deeply enslaved. And that theme will kind of come up when we talk about money. I think I've heard you say it before too, this notion of freedom through structure, which is counterintuitive, right? Like structure by definition yeah. means you don't have as much freedom, but by setting constraints and sort of, you know, I'll just speak for myself in my own life, by deciding what matters most to me and locking those in as values, I have the freedom to live without the constant burden of deciding on every single thing as to whether or not I should or shouldn't do it. Like I pre-decide what matters most, 95% of my decisions are already made, and I'm free to live a much more spacious, unstressed life because I don't always have to be deciding, you know, someone asked me to do this. Should I do that or not? Well, I don't know. What are the consequences? What are the pros? It's like, no, I've already decided that thing doesn't fit into my value set, so I'm just gonna say no. I don't even have to think about it. So freedom through structure is a weird counterintuitive thing that I think for me has held true. And for a lot of people that I know that live structured lives, they actually seem way more free, ironically.
Yeah, I think a really easy example that I think drives the intuition home is having children. Mm-hmm. And if you talk to people who are afraid of having children, and I use that word intentionally, I think that most people are afraid of having children. Not they don't want to. I think usually they're afraid. And maybe I'm just projecting my own past self onto those people. But there's a, on paper, there's a bunch of quote unquote freedoms that you lose. And you lose the ability to sleep in on Saturday, or you lose the ability to, you know, you have responsibility. And it requires a bit of added stress in your life and a bit of, changing your habits. And, typically you'll start trying to sleep better and do all these things that actually improve your life as well, which is interesting. But having children, like parents out there will tell you, like, this is not a, like I'm not in the grip. I'm not losing my freedom having children. Like this is aligning with a deep value set within me being a good father, and it's challenging, but it is certainly better than being the quote unquote free, dinky, double income, no kids. That lifestyle is just not a desirable situation. It's like, I'm a big Jocko Willink fan. Discipline equals freedom. It's such a powerful meme. It's very true. You just work hard, push your time preference out like a week usually, and you're good to, like, you're going to do better than the person who's operating within a couple hours of that time preference, right? It's
And I freedom and security / comfort are like these two opposing forces. Like the classic question, right? Would you rather be a lion that is free to roam the savannah, but is fully responsible for obtaining their own food and fending off enemies? Like, that's a free lion, but they could die. They could starve. They could be attacked. Or the inverse, choice number two, is would you rather be a lion that's stuck in a cage, that is fed every day predictably, that is physically trapped, but is safe and comfortable with zero responsibility? So that's like, in the limit, that's kind of the question, right? Would you rather be a comfortable, safe, quote unquote, safe slave? Even the comfortable part is very debatable, because like, how long is that comfortable for? Or would you rather be a free human and accept the risks that you are fully responsible for your outcomes? And I think the fear of having children, which I've heard and seen in a lot of people, I think it's true to a large degree, is really just the fear of responsibility, right? The fear of maybe failure, right? When you take full responsibility and you can't blame anyone, you can't blame the system, you can't blame your trauma, you can't blame the external circumstances, it is all on you. And for a lot of people, taking that on is extremely scary and maybe super unfamiliar, because in a fiat world, everything revolves around removing responsibility to improve convenience and comfort.
Not only that, but I think that a lot of times there's a fear of the future, which is of course tied to the fiat world, because things are in that kind of, through that lens, things are getting worse and worse. People are getting poorer, like families are getting less able to sustain themselves. You know, the classic home ownership, marriage statistics, and people around 30 is dropping. So it's that perception of the world getting worse is a terrifying place to bring children into. But if you change that lens, then all of a sudden you have a bunch of essentially Bitcoiners out there having a bunch of kids, and Christians out there having a bunch of kids, because they just trust in God, or they trust in the power of, and or they trust in the power of this financial protocol. You know,
interestingly, lots of overlap. There's a lot of Christian Bitcoiners, and a lot of Bitcoiners that I know, myself included, are exploring Christianity. So I just find it so interesting, the high amount of overlap between the two. And I think when you get down into fundamentals of them both, there's so many similarities and parallels that it kind of makes more sense, right? The same character who gravitates towards going to the source code in Bitcoin is the same character that values going to the source code in the Bible, right? It's like, don't trust, verify for yourself. And I think the prison of safety is also, like, I think when you bring things into the limit, it actually gives people sort of a more eye-opening view of what they may have accepted as an assumption, but doesn't make full sense. And the prison of safety is that if you want to be maximally safe from other people, from, you know, in the COVID world, from viruses, from hurtful words, whatever, you want to be maximally safe, you can lock yourself in a prison cell and you will be maximally safe, right? Like, solitary confinement is maximal safety, but it's also a prison of the highest form. It's the highest form of human torture. So it's just this weird thing where the uncertainty of the future and the requirement for responsibility when you're not protected from everything is way more, it's way more enjoyable. Well, I don't know what I'm trying to say. It makes more sense for me to accept uncertainty, which is a given, than it is to try and create a false sense of certainty and shut myself off from everything. And that's kind of like the choice between safety and freedom, is this idea that safety, like, and you push that into the limit, full safety means you're in a prison and you're essentially trapped in this fear mode of accepting, not wanting to accept any responsibility. And so I think freedom through responsibility is the big tangent that kind of ties into this next topic, which is that the monetary system that we live within serves as a system of incentives that govern our lives, basically. I don't know if everyone would agree with that. I found it to be very true. And I think the reality is that most Canadians are unintentionally participating in a system of money without realizing the harmful consequences of that system on their lives. So to kind of like lay it out, it's like we got two monetary systems. The system that everyone is born into, you, me, everyone I know, that they're born into until they accept responsibility for studying money and making a conscious decision to opt out, is the fiat system. So this system is built on fraudulent inflationary currency. It's built on a lie. And because of that, it requires theft and coercion to continue surviving. So it's baked into the system. Like, baked into the system of fiat is the erosion of personal freedom and liberty. And the system is fragile and relies on deception and tightening controls to keep itself alive. The alternative.
And you're also, sorry, go on.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to add to that and say, like, you're limited in what you can purchase and what you can do with that money. It's like the unfreedom of that system is never more obvious when you go to a bank and try and take out more than they're comfortable with you taking out,
Right.
or bank runs, or cash purchases over, what is it, $10,000, which every year is becoming less and less valuable. So eventually that $10,000 in a few years is going to purchase you much less, and continually less and less. So you are less and less free to transact in this way. Same $10,000, very different purchasing power and very different freedom to transact with that limit, which I believe there is, or they're trying to make some sort of limit on cash transactions. I've only heard of this. I haven't looked into it deeply, but the bank is going to look at you funny if you try and take $10,000 out in cash either way. I'll tell you that, but
they may not even have 10 grand to give you. This is the weird reality of fractional reserve banking that people don't understand. It's like the money that shows up on the internet when you check your bank account, it's not your money. And it's not even in the bank. Like, it's a weird topic for another day, but that's a really good point. And I mean, if you donate to a peaceful protest, you might just get cut off full hog from access to your money. So it's like,
or get fired, or
yeah,
like I have friends that got fired for that.
It's so crazy.
That's yeah.
So that's system one, built on lies, requires coercion and increasing control in order to stay alive. The alternative system is one built on honest, sound money, and it's called Bitcoin. And the Bitcoin system is built on truth, which empowers people to reclaim responsibility and freedom. The system as a whole strengthens personal freedoms and liberty, and it essentially serves as a direct counterbalance to the system of control. And instead of being fragile that relies on deception, it's really robust. In fact, it's anti-fragile, and it can't be corrupted, right? If we had to say Bitcoin probably won't be corrupted, Bitcoin wouldn't be what it is, right? The whole point is it cannot be corrupted. And it also is permissionless, which is part of this freedom element, right? Like, if you want to open a bank account, there is a lot of permission required, right? You have to show identification. You have to get their approval to open a bank account and give them your money. So there's already an element of control. They already have a piece of ID. They already have the right to shut your money down if they want, because that money that you put in the bank is the bank's money now. It's their liability. It's an IOU to you, but it's not actually your money anymore. And those weird 4 or 5 pages of contracts you sign when you open a bank account, in there, if you actually read it, says, when you give us your money, it's not your money anymore. We're going to lend it out 10-to-1. You're going to have to ask us permission to take it out, and we reserve the right to not give it back to you if we don't have it.
And this gets into what I was mentioning before about priors. And so I won't try and explain priors because I won't do a good job of it, but basically it's how our prior understanding of the world around us influences how we perceive things. And so if you came from freedom money your whole life, let's imagine you were born into Bitcoin and you moved to a country. You're 18, you want to open a bank account. You're like, what's a bank account? Let's go check this out. And they just throw a stack of paper on the table. It's like, yeah, welcome to our bank. These are the stipulations for, you know, like, it would be a very alien thing to go through.
Yeah.
It would be unacceptable to go through that. It would be like, it would be obvious how immoral and how just I don't know what else to say. It's just like, this is a strange situation we find ourselves in, and questioning it is worthwhile because it's very normal to everyone right now, but kind of, I guess,
that's really
looking
well
at
said.
It from a different perspective.
I've never done that thought experiment. I did hear Andreas Antonopoulos talk about this one time. And the thing he said was, think about your kids growing up in Bitcoin and then being told about bank accounts, going to a bank, having to give them all this information, and then being told you can only come into the bank to get your money Monday to Friday, 9 to 5. We're closed on weekends. It's like, what do you mean? Yeah. What are you talking about? I have to ask you permission to get my money, and I can't even come at certain times because you don't feel like showing up to give me my money? This is absurd. I'm just going to use internet money that I can set up in 30 seconds with zero identification and use on a Sunday at 4 a.m. and send someone money in Tokyo that arrives in 10 minutes with no permission required. Like, what are you talking about? Banking hours. This is ridiculous.
Yeah. Why am I suddenly able to purchase less and less over time?
Yeah.
My old money never did this. I just got richer and richer without doing anything.
Yeah. That's a great way of being able to see the diametrically opposed system. And so we're all born. So I'm calling the fiat system slave money. Fiat currency is slave money. Bitcoin is freedom money. And let's unpack that just a tiny bit. So we're all born into a slave money system that basically makes life more expensive over time. And because it's all built on a lie and truth is very dangerous, it requires the government to continually make attempts to erode our freedoms more and more and increase their control more and more. Because if people actually found out the truth, it's really just all a confidence game, right? It's a con game that people have faith that this paper stuff is actually real money. And if no one questions it, it's the only way it survives. The minute people start questioning it, especially now that there's something to opt out into that is far superior, the whole con game kind of starts to fall apart. So part of that control involves censoring what we say, right? Again, truth is dangerous to a system built on a lie. So baked into the fraudulent fiat system is an incentive to attack freedom of speech. And, you know, they do it in clever ways. I'll give them that, right? They can trick a lot of people into thinking it's a good thing by saying, we're going to limit hate speech, right? That little word, we're going to limit hate speech or word
misinformation
violence, or misinformation, yeah. Disinformation, whatever. They put all these labels and to the uninformed, it's like, yeah, hate speech doesn't sound good. Let's stop that. It's like, okay, if you've studied an ounce of history, you very quickly realize that the people who attack freedom of speech are never the good guys. People like Joseph Stalin, Kim Jong-un, Hitler. These are not good people. So the people who are censoring speech have never been found to be the good guys. And so just keeping that in mind is super important. And I think the slave money sounds like hyperbolic and a little bit extreme. But the reality is that if you use a form of money that steals your time, baked into the money is this idea of gradual, constant, and accelerating theft of people's time. You are effectively a slave, because the whole notion of a slave is someone owns you and forces you to do labor for them. And so if you bake in to the money this programmatic theft, it's like this super sneaky way to bake in slavery into the money that everyone uses. And it may be even worse than slavery, because at least probably most slaves knew they were slaves. Most people that are using slave money today don't think they're a slave. They think they're free. That's the most dangerous part of it.
Yeah.
You know, if you pay 40% of your income to the government, who can print as much money as they want, which that alone is a wonky one, right? Like you said in a past episode, if they can print as much money as they want, why do we have to give them taxes? So just marinate on that for a couple of minutes. It might leave you uncomfortable and with some good questions. Mm-hmm. So you give the government 40% of your income. You use a form of money that erodes around 8% a year on average. So that's another 8% that's being stolen from you. On top of that, you're paying taxes on the things you buy, paying taxes on the fuel to run your car, to heat your home. You're paying taxes on the home that you quote unquote own. You're paying taxes on gains that you make from investments where you took risk, made a return. The government thinks they are owed a part of that. You pay taxes on profits made by your business. Like, when it's all said and done, if 65% of the days in a year you're working just to pay the government, that's slavery. Might be hard to hear.
Yeah, like at what I would just ask people to adjust the sliders up and down, and if they don't think that they're slaves now, tell me at which point you become one.
Yeah.
At what point is 40%? Okay, no, we need like at least 60% taxes to be a slave, or we need, you know, half. If half of my 80,000 hours that I'm going to work in my life, 40,000 hours is going to be spent paying a government that is woefully underperforming in its delivery of services to me. Is that slavery? I would suggest that the number is far lower than 40%. I would suggest that think about the life of a $100 bill in your society. Where does it go? And in how many transactions does it get turned into the government? And it's not very many. Just do the math. Sales tax, income tax, all that. It's not a long-lived $100 bill.
Agreed. And it hasn't always been like this. This is another thing too, is
yeah, it's our priors. They're messed up.
Yeah, our priors are built on this very brief period of time where we've done this odd monetary experiment where we based the money on nothing and made it fraudulent. And, it's that old, saying, there's two young fish, they're swimming around, the old fish comes up and says, "How's the water, boys?" And the fish say, "What's water?"
Mm-hmm.
You don't even acknowledge it. You don't even acknowledge the value of asking what is money, because money is something that is so baked into your life through your parents, through the culture, that you basically take it at face value and trust that it's okay. Because frankly, if you have to have curiosity and bandwidth to actually ask the question, what is money, and do the work to figure out what makes money good money, what's good money, what's bad money, what are the principles that's based on, what is money supposed to actually do, right? That requires some curiosity. Or in the case of places that undergo hyperinflation, just a lot of pain, right, will force you into really buckling down on what, a loaf of bread today was $50 and tomorrow it's going to be $200. What the heck is happening right now? I need to learn about money, right? If you live in Venezuela or if you live in Zimbabwe, like, these people have gone through these things. And I think all this is like real nasty stuff, but the bright light at the end of the tunnel is that for the first time in history, there is an alternative system of freedom money based on truth that is global, permissionless, and anyone at any time can opt in. The price they must pay is responsibility. And that is fundamental. Again, it's like, I think there is a fear of accepting responsibility, and there is a comfort that comes from not having to learn about money, because you just use money and you just go about your life and you don't think anything's wrong, because we're all used to being taxed at half our stuff. We're all used to using money that degrades in value. We're all used to things getting more expensive, right? Timbits get expensive, more expensive every year. That's just how it goes. And these, like you said, these priors of never confronting these things means that they're just baked into your worldview of the world as it is, and it could not be any different.
And this medium that we're swimming through is the reason why guys like Jeff Booth say you need to say this over and over and over again.
Yeah.
Because you're insane, and you need to make yourself sane by telling yourself over and over, no, this is the, I use the word insane basically as like your priors are affecting the way you perceive reality in this way. And, yeah. And I don't want to, kind of on the bright side of this responsibility thing, like, people are rightly, being cautious when you're sending transactions and not like vaporizing a Bitcoin into the universe and just like,
because you messed up one digit.
Yeah. I'm not going to make light of that, and I can't say that I've lost any sort of life-changing wealth with Bitcoin. So I don't want to make light of this idea of responsibility, or if people have undergone this, like making big mistakes is not uncommon, especially early on with Bitcoin. But I kind of, in thinking of this, discipline equals freedom. Discipline is hard, but when you're plugged into this monetary system, things kind of change. Things kind of upend and turn upside down in very strange ways. And I was thinking about this. Let's say you had this like absolutely insane generational wealth, like 1,000 Bitcoin 10 years ago. Okay. Like 10 years ago, 10 years is a long time in human life. But when it comes to generational wealth, it's nothing. It's not insane, right? It's a if I were to say I'm going to save up generational wealth in 10 years, that would make me a very lucky human being. If you were to have lost that money 10 years ago and said, oh, well, I'm just going to plug back into the network, move my time and energy onto this network and keep saving and just stoically drive on despite having lost this insane sum of money. And you just put $100 a week in over the last 10 years. It's like $1.5 million now. It's like I could be wrong. I don't think the details matter. I used like a DCA calculator to find this out. I was just thinking about it. And so even get granted catastrophic, if, like quote unquote, catastrophic failures of your ability to apply responsibility to your money, you're still okay. Like the you are still, it's really weird to think about, because if the same thing happened with fiat currency, now it's harder to earn money that it's just, it's very interesting having this like very modest kind of accretion of satoshis of Bitcoin over time can just heal this mistake that you've made. And it's obviously not making you whole. Okay. Like 1,000 Bitcoin is different than 15 Bitcoin, of course, except it's, I think that just this like, it does fundamentally change the way we think about these losses and this like this heavy burden of responsibility. It kind of lightens it a bit. I'm not saying that it's like it sucks if you lost your stack doing something silly or if someone took it from you, you know, it's like, but it's just an interesting thought experiment to kind of run.
Yeah, it's like so long as you can create more than you can consume and give value to the world, you have an opportunity for redemption because we're still so early. The fact that you can buy 700 something Satoshis for one Canadian dollar, which is worthless, literally worth less every month, is kind of crazy. That's how early we are. Like eventually, no one's even going to want to sell you a Canadian dollar for one sat. That could happen in our lifetimes, which sounds crazy, but I truly believe before I die, it will be hard to even buy one sat with one Canadian dollar, which is like beyond what people can imagine because it's just so abstract right now.
And I think that because of the way deflation works, that you're never early, or sorry, you're never too late, because like sure you might be accruing less and less Bitcoin all the time, but I haven't fully formed my thoughts around this, but I really think that it's almost like we're too early in weird ways, because
I agree.
the more and more people, like imagine being like, you're not like, you can be too early to the internet. You know what I mean? Like you can be like, the functionality of the internet is improving. If you were to fast forward 50 years into Bitcoin, this fiat mindset of I need to accumulate more and more of this thing because my world is scary and I need to like stack my squirrel away my nuts for winter. I think that the whole point is that it eliminates the need for that, which is kind of what I was getting at with the just kind of getting back to work when you lose this like insane amount of money. It just reverses the way that we need to be thinking about these things. Obviously saving for the future is kind of the whole name of the game, so there's a lot of weird contradictions here. But I think that like the more people that get on board with this, sure, I'm like buying 1,000 Satoshis is going to be challenging in the future. I just think that the world in which you're spending those Satoshis is so vastly improved that you're just laughing at this idea of worrying about it. And I could be wrong about that, but that's just the optimist in me, I guess, but.
I agree. I think it is a fundamentally different world, and it's going to change in ways we can't even the most stooped, deep Bitcoiners can't fully imagine what the world of Bitcoin is going to look like in 20 years, because things will be created that we literally can't even imagine the things that are going to be created right now. Just like we couldn't imagine that we would have hyper intelligence in supercomputers in our pockets 20 years ago. Like, maybe someone could imagine that, but it's like you didn't even have the ingredients to factor that into a possible reality. And now that we have this totally different, it's like Bitcoin is an ingredient that just got invented, and now a whole new set of recipes are possible that we didn't even know could be created before. And I think just to close out this topic of freedom money versus slave money, I think it really boils down to the fact that the more power you give the government, the less powerful you are. The more powerful you are is a derivative of how much responsibility you accept. And the more powerful you are, the less powerful the government becomes over your life. So, you know, when you grow your own food, when you take care of yourself, and when you earn money that the government can't steal from you, and you don't rely on government handouts for survival, the government has really little effect on your life, frankly. Like, the government can do the most heinous things, but it really doesn't affect you because you have accepted more responsibility. Therefore, you have become the author of your fate instead of being at the whims of external forces that give you this sense of false sense of security and comfort. But the cost is that you are fully dependent on them and their decisions, even if those decisions affect you in a negative way. And so a system built on corruption rewards corruption and punishes integrity, which is kind of is what fiat is. It's where we're at in Canada largely right now. And a system built on truth rewards integrity and punishes corruption. And I think that's where we're headed in Canada when we restore a sound money standard. And I say when, because I don't know how long it's going to take us to get there, but it is a certainty in my mind, because the only unknown is how fast it happens and how the process ends up working out. But the fiat money is literally making itself irrelevant over time in an accelerating rate. And I think our mission, the Orange mission, is to accelerate the process of it going into irrelevance and minimizing the collateral suffering by helping individuals protect themselves and adopt sound money in their personal lives, so that when the acceleration of the collapse does happen, they're protected, right? It's like that metaphor of there's a giant boat, it's heading for a shore, it's heading for an iceberg, it's going to sink, everyone's going to die. The more people we can get off the boat into life rafts, the less collateral damage is going to be from this captain who's drunk and can't see that he needs to turn the ship. Or maybe the ship just has too much momentum and can't be turned, right? Maybe that's a more accurate metaphor. So Bitcoin is the socioeconomic lifeboat where anyone at any time without permission can port all their socioeconomic energy into this honest system and radically transform and upgrade their lives. Most people just don't know about it yet. And that is kind of the mission that we're on. We got 14 minutes left, and the last thing I want to talk about and just riff on is this notion that freedom of speech is the foundation for democracy, right? I think just like most people are under the illusion of being free when in fact they are not very not free, I think the illusion of democracy is propagated in Canada. I think if you go around to the average boomer and say, do we live in a democracy in Canada? They would pretty much all say yes. But I remember Elon Musk was really beating this drum quite a bit. And I've always thought that fraudulent currency is an error code in democracy, but it was always tricky to kind of explain how that was, how that came to be. And yeah, I think fiat creates the illusion of democracy within the reality of tyranny, and it's mainly through the erosion of free speech. And free speech is required for democracy because the only way you can know what you're voting for is if you're getting correct information. So for example, if someone can't expose a lie being told by a politician, or if an honorable politician cannot speak freely about what they seek to do and actually reach the people, individuals don't have all the information required to make a wise choice about who to vote for, right? So the only way you know what you're voting for is if people have freedom of speech. And the incentive is always such that the people in power will censor to amplify their lies by wielding sort of the money printer to push it out into propaganda, and they'll wield their power to censor other people who may dissent against their opinions or want to expose lies. So we need freedom of speech. And right now, freedom of speech is under attack in Canada in a major way. We see it in the EU. You see it in the UK especially, right? Like people go to jail because they posted something on social media that was construed as hate speech. The whole point of free speech is to be able to say something that other people don't like. Just like the whole point is to allow other people to say things to you that you may not like. And this idea that words are violence is this weird manipulation to try and convince people that censoring people is good. Like I said before, the people who are censoring free speech are never the good guys. So,
well, to say that words are violence is the most, I think it's the fundamental Orwellian shift. You know, peace, freedom is slavery. Or like it is, they are diametrically opposed. And you have two ways of basically, you basically have two choices. You can have a conversation or you can use violence to get what you want. Circling back to money, money is a way of, I think that using the use of money is speech. Yep. In a way.
It's like the language of value.
The language of value. It's like the way to manipulate your environment to your will without the use of force. And so you basically you use the self-interests of strangers to change the environment to your liking. That's what money, that's an answer to the question of what money is. And so essentially, as far as freedom of speech goes to this extent, it's Bitcoin is just ungovernable, uncensorable ability to shape the world to your will in a peaceful way, which is, yeah.
I think it was Charlie Kirk that said, if people aren't talking, things will get violent. Which goes back to what you said. Like, if speech doesn't work, people turn to violence as a way to change their surroundings. And so it's almost like by calling speech violence, you automatically nudge people towards violence. And it's no surprise that the people who are most pro-censorship are often the most violent, which is, it's just crazy how warped things have become. And I think another thing that I heard Elon Musk said too that resonated was this idea that if you scare people enough, they will demand the removal of freedoms.
Mm-hmm.
Right? If you scare them enough, they will opt to be put in safe prisons because they're so scared. And so he says that scaring the crap out of people is the path to tyranny because they demand the removal of freedoms in order to get this false sense of safety. So I think another thing JetBlue says is there is no them or us, there is only us. And they are a reflection of the majority of us, right? So the politicians that right now, these unserious people talking about unserious things, are simply a reflection of the average Canadian not taking responsibility for truth and believing what they're told from sources that are heavily biased and frankly straight up propaganda. So when enough people take responsibility, they can upgrade their own lives and have extra bandwidth to then help other people take more responsibility. And it's almost like fiat currency, because it is constantly stealing our time and constantly plugging these really perverse incentives into society, is forcing us to constantly be distracted from the fact that they're stealing from us, right? And constantly, and not have bandwidth to actually think about the things that we've just accepted at face value, right? If you're in survival mode and you're worried about making enough money to put food on the table tomorrow and to pay your mortgage next month, you don't have extra space and bandwidth to reevaluate these big questions. Like, what do I want to do in my life? Am I happy in my life? What is money? What is government? Do we actually have democracy? So it's almost like you get enough people to switch to sound money. They become shielded from government abuse. They have the bandwidth to think about the bigger questions. And they can be agents of change to propagate truth because they have protection from government theft. So, yeah, I don't know if this was a clear conversation. Hopefully the people listening find this helpful. Even if it's just one nugget that you tease out of this, one touch point that talked about freedom or defined an element of freedom in a different way than you're used to, that can be valuable over time. But I think a good question is to just think about how free actually are you? And the question that you said at the start, in what areas of my life am I willfully removing freedoms in order to have a benefit of maybe more comfort, more convenience? And you know, where can you start chipping away at taking more responsibility in your life? It might be with your health. It might be with your money. It might be in the media you consume, right? Like all the ideas we have in our minds came from somewhere. Most of them were not fully thought through and formed by ourselves. I think people overestimate how many ideas they have are actually theirs. And by switching to sound money, you have the space and bandwidth to think about the bigger questions and actually reevaluate how free you actually are. And then work towards achieving more freedom in your life. Because I think, like you said at the very start, I think most people think freedom is good. I also just think most people have a weird perception and a manipulated definition of freedom.
Mm-hmm.
Because the people who are keeping us unfree aren't interested in us understanding what freedom is and understanding the path to actual freedom. And I think that path starts with using money that doesn't steal from you and using money that does not wield control as part of the system that is baked in there, designed to get worse and worse over time, right? The only way to escape that slavery is to opt out of slave money. Anything else to say before we finish up?
No, just that I count myself among the people that are fundamentally confused about freedom.
Same with me.
Like it's actually tough to figure this out and to actually apply in your life. But it can be pretty fruitful thing to do. It can be a pretty fruitful thing to do. Yeah.
It's worth thinking about. It's almost like trying to prep for this left me with more questions about freedom
100%
than it did with answers.
Yeah.
Which may have come through in a confusing, rambling conversation, but anyway, we hope you found that valuable. If you got to this point, thanks for still being here. Thanks for listening. Share this with someone who you think can benefit from it. If you want to support the show, donate at CanadianOrangeParty.com. Check out EndInflationCanada.com. And study money, take care of yourself, opt into freedom money, and we'll be back next week for another episode.